found us having a rousing rendition of our vitality is very thankful. In your meeting here, you know that it's true that the whole enchilada is all about the Well, even though it's summer, I'm a public educator, and that means that it's time for hot food. So, if I aim this here, it'll be okay, right? Okay, now some of you have seen this before, and you all get aged. Anyone else struggle a little bit with it? It's pretty easy. Just be quiet. Check it out. Well, how about that? How you do? Not so good. Some of you might look like you might want another category besides history. So let's try something more familiar with some of you. Let's try business. Name this company. And not surprising from the title, it's General Motors in 1975. Well, a lot of you did a little bit better, and some of you are sweating a little bit, but thankfully, don't worry, be rated on the curve. And let's try one more here. Please name the state. Unfortunately, it's my responsibility to tell you that this is Wisconsin this year. Some of you look like you can still use some extra credit, so let me ask you a few oral questions here. All right? How many of you think that there will be less technology in our world and in our schools in the next 5 years? Raise your hand. Okay. Second one. How many of you think there will be less global competition and less demand for skilled workers in the next 5 years? How many of you think there will be fewer low-skilled jobs outsourced to China and India in the next 5 years? You guys still awake out there? Let me try one more, all right? How many of you think that our current seventh graders will be prepared to compete with their classmates in other countries when they graduate from 5 years of public schools who offer in the same manner we have today? Well, it doesn't seem like you got much arm exercise with all of that. I'm really concerned about the answers to those questions, and it appears that many of you are as well. Change is a constant in our world, and the examples of Great Britain and General Motors and what's happening right now in Wisconsin serve as reminders that people, businesses, countries, and even states that don't prepare for the future will face dire consequences for lack of foresight and preparation. What can public education in Wisconsin do in the future? I think quite a bit. And I'd like to share with you just three key points that I have outlined. The first is that we must heed the warning signs. Now, for many of you, it looks like this will be just kind of a repeat of parts of your life, but let me walk you through it again anyway. In the mid-1970s, those wonderful years gone by, General Motors had it all. It had almost a 50% market share in the United States. It had the best-selling car model, the automobile company. The largest dealership network and a tradition that linked GM with the very fabric of our country. Remember the slogan, as GM goes, so goes the nation. Maybe it wasn't so far off. It was then, however, at the height of its corporate success in the mid-70s that the downfall of GM began. Within a few years, by the late 1970s, it was already known that the Japanese would produce a similar model for $2,000 less per car. A few years later, in 1983, Consumer Reports magazine told us that every GM model has worse than average ratings for quality. By 1986, GM's market share in only 10 years had now dropped down to 40%. GM's chief financial officer at the time said, quote, for the $40 billion that GM has invested in the past 10 years in plants and equipment, it could have bought Toyota and Nissan. Instead, it company lost market share. Something is obviously wrong. In 1992, heeding that warning, GM lost an average of $1,500 on every vehicle produced in North America. The UAW contract required defined benefit pension plans that forced GM to pay retired workers for life. Fortune magazine concluded in 1992, GM must restructure radically if it is going to survive. 13 years later, in 2005, not much had really changed, and GM's market share was now down to 20%. Pension and health care spending was over $2,000 per vehicle, which was a major reason that GM was losing money on every single vehicle sold in North America. Now, I don't know how many of you were really that surprised to find GM on the brink of bankruptcy last fall, but these warning signs, and many others that I skipped over, believe me, as I reduced many pages, have been visible, discussed, dissected, and in the news for 30 years, but nobody heeded them. So what about Wisconsin's public school system? What are our warning signs? What do they look like? Well, we've witnessed a decline of program and services being offered due to budget cuts required by state law. 16 years of revenue limits continuing for the next 2 years with no end in sight has caused significant reductions in staff and programs. Simply put, I defy anyone to take this business plan to a bank and receive funding. We have some bankers here, people want to bank on this fee today. Okay, here's my plan, thank you. I'll come to your office right after this meeting. Here's the deal, my costs are going to raise 4% a year, and my revenues will increase 2% a year. Would you please approve my business plan and give me a loan? Oh, wait, I forgot. We're not going to do that just this year because it's a down year in the economy. Last year, the year before, for 16 years, and by the way, we're going to keep doing it that way. We're going to have a 2% deficit every year. Well, that's our state law. First passed in the early 1990s as a two-year property tax relief measure that then was extended indefinitely. So the obvious result is we now have a 2% annual deficit in schools that has forced school boards across the state to cut programs and staff each year. After 16 years of cutting, there's really not much left to do than stuffing 35 kids into your classroom and you start to eliminate art, music, and other courses such as that. All this is happening, by the way, at the very same time that we expect our increasingly diverse student population to be world-ready to compete so that our state will be a reliable economic engine for future generations. What does this budget look like? I've been talking to you about it. Here's the latest information from the Department of Public Instruction website. From Madison, I grabbed this from Madison, and I have to tell you, I sent the wrong slide. This is revenue per member, which means per student. The one that I actually had that I messed up on is cost per member. But because they need a balanced budget, same thing. So you look at it, and what you can see clearly enough is that the cost increase continues to rise at the same time that the expectations, the budgets are being cut as required by state law. You also notice that blue portion down at the bottom, that is the state contribution to what we have as the state requires us to cutting the budget. If you're wondering what that red piece is that keeps going and you're looking at that, those would be your local property taxes trying to make up the difference between what the state and the federal government are contributing. Now we have a state funding formula that's so complex that only a handful of people actually understand it. And as a result, everyone has agreed privately that something needs to be changed. But nothing's ever done by our political leaders. Does that sound familiar to what we've heard about GM? Everything we do thinks we can structure, but we're not doing it. The result is not only shrinking school programs most everywhere, but also considerable programs across our state, and even monitors their benefit. For example, how does Madison compare to other communities? This is the current education cost per student. Current education means that we strip off transportation and facilities. The this is really what the actual education part of the population is here. As you can see from this chart, the amount of money spent per student varies considerably around Wisconsin. Now, what do you think is the benefit of such a system? Because I'll tell you, even the folks next door in Ripon in Green Lake at the top of that chart are complaining and are having to cut their teaching staff and their courses every single year. So let's summarize our financial situation. We have a structural deficit that's decreasing the quantity and quality of our services. We have a rising cost per student at a time of increasing diversity and special needs. And we have a funding formula that allows vast inequities across the state. Does anybody think that this is a sustainable path for the future? Does anyone think that this will actually result in a good product? Does anyone believe that this bodes well for the future of our state, our economy, and our quality of life? Yet, like GM, we fail to heed the warning signs of impending disaster. Let's move on to point number two. Beware of legacy practices. During its 30-year well-documented slide, GM pretty much continued business as usual, even in the face of all the warning signs. Well, why is that? Well, those who have studied GM and other organizations sum it up in two words: legacy practices. Most of what we do each day is a maintenance of the status quo. Even when faced with undesirable consequences of continuing on the current path, legacy thinking causes us to continue with legacy practices. Now, noted economist Robert Samuelson wrote, quote, "It was obvious 25 years ago that GM could not continue with spending debt, but the union wouldn't surrender benefits and the company acquiesced. Inertia prevailed until the entire structure toppled in the day of reckoning." Now, education experts have said that the very public institution intended for student learning has become focused instead on adult employment. I say that as an employee. Adult practices and attitudes have become embedded in organizational cultures governed by state regulations and contracts that dictate most of what occurs inside schools today. And any impetus to change directions or structure is met with stiff resistance. It's as if we're stuck in a time warp, keeping a 19th century school model on life support in an attempt to meet 21st century demands. This is not a road to future success. Now let me give you two quick examples to demonstrate the hazards of legacy practices. These are both striking close to home. Every teacher needs to be licensed by a DPI, and the regulations are enforced quite vigorously. There's lots of talk about needing more math and science in our schools. You've all heard that, and yet the licensing regulations actually make that nearly impossible. You see, a math major is licensed to teach any math course in middle school or high school. But a science major is only licensed for a single course. Now, here's how this legacy practice plays out. My daughter was a high school valedictorian. She was a biology major with an emphasis in environmental studies. As the daughter of two educators, a science major, and frankly smarter than most college graduates, she would have been a great addition to the teaching courses. But here's what really happened. Like many across the state, our middle school in Ripon, similar to most others, has a curriculum that has 6th grade earth science, 7th grade physical science, and 8th grade life science. Now, even though my daughter is a science major who's required to take several chemistry courses at high level and considerable earth science instruction as part of her college major, she's ineligible to even teach 6th grade earth science or 7th grade physical science. She could only teach 8th grade life science. Despite all her background, she wasn't pre-licensed in W and W level courses. And we're not even talking about high school yet. In other words, roadblocks and obstacles are expensive factors for everyone. Knowing what we do about the direction our schools must take to prepare our students to compete globally. globally, what justification is there for this legacy practice? Yet it persists and limits what we can do in Wisconsin schools, and we are checked on it every single year because that is what the regulations require. Let me give you another example. Similar to GM, our schools are unionized, with staffing costs typically consuming 75 to 85% of the school district's budget. Expenditures relating to salaries, benefits, and workers are major components of every school district's cost structure. Current retirement benefits in many districts, locally negotiated, are now eating instructional dollars the same way GM retirement costs boost the cost of every vehicle. For example, Milwaukee's OPEB, that's other post-employment benefits liability, now stands at $2.2 billion. That is 1,000% of their school district's annual tax collections. That means it would take 10 years of paying taxes to go to nothing else but retirement benefits just to fund their current retirement obligations. Waukesha schools have $200 million in OPEB, which is 250% of its annual tax collections. Madison, small potatoes, don't worry about it. You're only at $27 million, which is 13% of your annual tax collections. Now, I'm not knocking retirement. Actually, I hope to be able to retire someday, and there are quite a few people who hope that also. But I do worry about our children's future when so much is being siphoned off from our limited budget each year to pay for the retirement of 55-year-olds, including some administrators, especially when there is insignificant movement in union negotiations across the state to acknowledge and change the collision course that we are currently on. GM through this legacy practice of funding enormous retiree costs is not sustainable in today's world. Yet Wisconsin's response in June in this past budget was to actually remove the requirement that labor arbitrators, must take revenue limits into account when determining a district's ability to afford newly negotiated compensation packages, while at the same time adding the amount of teacher preparation time to the list of mandatory topics that now must be negotiated in all future union contracts. Legacy practices are all around us, and they dramatically limit how school leaders can respond to a changing world. And our state's political scene has evolved into a tug of war over who can control these legacy practices in a game of musical chairs where everyone hopes to get theirs before the music stops and we all go belly up. Let's talk about point number three. Plan for the long term. Now, back in the late 70s, Oldsmobile Cutlass was the nation's number one selling car. By the mid-80s, the Cutlass was selling over 1 million cars a year. What was GM's response to this feat? They froze. They turned their backs on innovation and the future and kept the Cutlass model exactly as it was. And it wasn't long before it was paid. Revenues decreased. GM decided that they could actually combat that, not by changing the car, but by becoming more efficient. And so they started sharing designs among the divisions. Soon you couldn't tell the difference between an Oldsmobile, a Chevrolet, a Buick, or a Pontiac, because they were all the same. As you know, in 2003, the Oldsmobile division was closed from number one in sales to closed in 20 years because GM didn't plan for the future. Now, meanwhile, Toyota was planning ahead. Now, it's hard to believe, but there we are 15 years ago in the 1990s, already 20 years after the formation of OPEC and all of the global turmoil that was caused in the 1970s in the Middle East. Toyota executives said, gee, maybe we're going to be worried about the cars in an age when oil production was threatened by political instability in oil-producing regions. 20 years. Think about that, and that's when they decided to start planning for the future, and they did something revolutionary and started planning for the future. Now, the success of the Prius today is now in its 3.0 version, not 2.0, is clear. GM, by the way, now has 15 years of makeup time. So let's take a look at Wisconsin public education and see how it's playing for the future. Do we look more like the GM Oldsmobile, resting on our laurels of past success, or the Toyota Prius designed for success in the future? First, let's review what's happening in today's world. The current number of internet users in China today now exceeds the entire United States population. More text messages are sent each day than the number of people who live on the planet. The top 10 jobs for 2010 didn't even exist in 2004. The U.S. Department of Labor estimates that today's students will have 10 to 14 jobs by the age of 38. The country with the most English speakers is China. India now has more honor students than the United States has students. In 2006, India and China combined graduated 5 times more students from college than the United States. So how is Wisconsin's public school system based on a 100-year-old model of preparing students for success? Already explained, we have this 2% structural deficit. Here's what it looks like in Ripley. For the past few years, and for the future, under our revenue limits law, out of the $23 million annual budget, we need to shave about $4.3 million, or nearly 20% of our budget in a 6-year period, while our enrollment remains relatively stable. And these cuts come on top of a decade and a half of annual budget cuts to deal with the structural deficit mandated by that same state law. And yet, at the same time, we are responsible for that. Now, during the past 2 decades, at the same time that Wisconsin's been annually cutting its investment in education, what do you think India and China have been doing? Well, they have been significantly increasing their investment in education. So how beneficial is it to invest in education? Well, the Minneapolis Federal Reserve conducted a research study and concluded that we received an $8 return for every dollar spent just in early education alone. Now, I don't know about you, but if I can get an $8 return for every dollar, that's where I'm headed immediately after this meeting. James Heckman, who's a Nobel Prize-winning economist and professor at the Chicago has looked at what's happened and concluded that if the current trend continues, there will be fewer educated Americans in the workforce, which will result in low productivity that will stifle our economy. So how's our plan for the future work? Now, I was raised in an entrepreneurial family. My father took over his father's business, and my brother actually now runs it as it's celebrating its 100th year. Most of my siblings and cousins are involved in running their own businesses, and we were taught in order to make money, you have to invest money to make money. And that being the case, I said, okay, so what about states that are investing in education and states that are not? It looks so pretty on the screen. Well, let me tell you what it says. If you're up close, you can see on the left and the green side, on the left hand side, you can see those are the states, the top 10 states who are investing in education, 1 through 10, Wisconsin is in there, although this is older data from 2003, as you can see. And our average income growth was 4.3%. On the left side are the bottom 10 states. Their average income growth was only 3.8%, and on the very bottom, the income growth of all the states together is 4.1%. Basically, what it tells us is that those states who are investing in furthermore, economists tell us that 2/3 of the money spent on education circulates in the economy and creates jobs outside of education. So not only does education prepare children for the future, but it provides jobs for adults both inside and outside of education for living in the present. Let's talk about responsibility we have to future generations to continue to improve upon what was passed along to us from our parents. Let me put it another way. How many of you here are grandparents? I'm going to do some arm exercise here. You've had big lunch. You've got to work it off somehow. Okay. How many of you have a grandchild living in the community other than where you live? So my question is this. Who does not expect the members of that other community to do what's necessary to provide a top quality education for your grandchild? We expect that taxpayers in the community where our grandchildren will do the right thing for kids. Nobody I've ever met has told me that they don't care if their grandchild receives a second-rate education. And that's because grandparents realize that a second-rate education will limit their grandchild's future. At the same time that we have expectations of living in the communities where our grandchildren, there are grandparents all over the country who are looking at us and expecting the same thing of us. We will take care of their grandchildren, living in our communities and in our state. So my question is, how are we doing with what I call the grandparents' content? Now, General Motors failed for the same reason that the human lost its economy. The warning signs were all there with flashing lights, but people just continued with their legacy practices under the false belief that the status quo would be maintained forever. They lacked a plan for the future that was destined to be different. It was business as usual until they were eclipsed by those who had a vision, a sense of urgency, and weren't victims of their own entitlement mentality. Wisconsin's public schools are undeniably in decline. Programs have been cut, class sizes have increased, facilities are in need of repair, and student achievement is not keeping up with what's necessary in our global economy. Before it's too late, we need a radical plan for reversing this trend. Simply throwing more money at schools to continue as they are now is not the answer. General Motors tried that, and they admitted their mistake of supporting legacy practices with more money while far-sighted competitors were investing less money in innovative practices. We cannot afford more of the same with just a bigger price tag. That's not what I'm talking about. What we do need to do is we need to invest in more, and we need to insist that our schools operate with the 21st century model. Undoubtedly, that will cause anger among those who don't want anything to change or might lose their current outdated jobs. But we need to break through the concept that public schools are an expense and not an investment. And at the same time, we need to stop looking at schools as places for adults to work and start treating schools as places for children to learn. Now, we've seen what happens when we don't heed the warning signs, we allow legacy practices to continue, and plan for the future. If nothing else, General Motors has taught us that it's our obligation to redesign and restructure now before it's too late. We need to do that for our children. We need to do that for our state. We need to do that for all of our future. Thank you very much.
Thanks to all of our Olympians, and we are adjourned.